Hello, my name is Anne Connolly. I'm a GP with special interest in gynaecology and the RCGP Clinical Champion in Women's Health. Today on this podcast, I'm talking to Tanya and we are discussing living with endometriosis. As you will know, endometriosis is a common condition. It affects up to an estimated 10% of the UK female population. Basically, it is caused by ectopic endometrium, which can be found anywhere in the body. It is usually found in the peritoneal cavity, fallopian tubes, or ovaries, but can be found in many other sites such as bowel, bladder, and even more remotely. The endometriosis is hormonally dependent, and the patches undergo the same cyclical changes of the normally cited endometrium. The issues caused by the endometrial shedding we see at the time of menstruation is obviously dependent on where the endometriosis is found, but typically causes cyclical pain initially. But if left untreated, the recurrent bleeding causes scarring and subsequent subfertility and chronic pelvic pain. Despite this condition being so common, it continues to be underdiagnosed, and the impact on the physical, psychological, and social well-being of women with endometriosis is poorly appreciated. I am delighted that Tanya has agreed to talk to us about this condition, the impact it has had on her life, and help us work together to consider how we can better support others suffering with endometriosis. So welcome, Tanya, and thank you for joining me. Would you like to explain some of the issues that have impacted on you? So what were the symptoms you first experienced, and what was it or when was it that you realised what you were experiencing was not normal?
Well, thank you for having me, Anne. So for me, mine started a bit later on in my teenage years. So I was at university when I was 18, 19. And that's the first time that I can remember having like really heavy periods. You know, you're like bowled over to the point where you feel like you can't walk. And I used to play basketball at the time, and I just remember kind of fainting playing basketball and those things that you don't normally associate with when you're having a period. And that pain threshold just went over what I expected a period should feel like. And I remember at the time I went to the GP on my campus, and they just said, oh, it's just a heavy period. Here are some contraceptive pills, and, you know, kind of just go about your day and go about your life, really.
Well, that sounds very difficult for you. So it's certainly impacting on your sport, but were there other things that, like, you felt you had to avoid during your period time?
You know, it's kind of just finding a way to manage. And for me, I used to get pains kind of radiating down my legs and my back, and obviously, you know, your pelvic region as well. Like, it just felt like my body was on fire. And the only way I could manage was through medication. And I'd have to take that throughout my period, throughout the day, especially the first few days, just to be able to get out of bed. And then when I started working, I used to call in sick or just phone my manager and say, like, you know, I've started my period today, I'll be 3 or 4 hours late, but I'll make up the time later on, or, you know, something along those lines. And I was fortunate enough to have managers that understood what I was going through and kind of left me to my own devices and hopefully didn't think that I was, you know, trying to pull a fast one or lying about it. Because I didn't have a diagnosis at that time. It was just me saying, you know, like every other female, I'm on my period. And that was that.
Wow, that's really difficult, isn't it? Especially when you are younger and trying to find your way in life, if you want, because obviously some of that would have affected your university, ability to attend lectures, exams, and then this issue of it being a monthly occurrence. So you don't get sort of a prolonged sick note from us as GPs. It's just every month. A really important issue, isn't it, for us to remember with younger women?
Yeah, definitely. And I come across a lot of women that I speak to that they're suffering a lot younger. And, you know, I don't know if the care's different or the symptoms are different. And it's so easy to miss and to misdiagnose as well. I mean, for me, it took about 9 years to get a diagnosis. So that's 9 years of, you know, going back and forth to the GPs and kind of not knowing what's going on with my body and trying to understand where this pain is coming from. And then, you know, you get to a point as well where it's not just during your cycle, it's before and after, or things that impact you in between, that you can't really put two and two together and know that it makes up endometriosis.
Yeah, really important points. So you said your GP originally gave you the contraceptive pill. Did you take that then? And was it helpful at the time?
I did. And I think I did because I didn't know any better. Obviously, I'm going to someone who is obviously more skilled in the field than I am. And I think at the time I was too young to understand what it was to do my own research. And obviously my parents go to the doctor and they'll fix you kind of thing. So yeah, I kind of was on the pill back to back for years and years and years. So I was still having my periods in between. And then in 2017 is when I saw a community gynecologist, and then he just told me to take the, I think, the combined pill straight, so to stop my periods. Well, and I haven't had a period since, to be honest, but that was their solution. And I've been on like medical menopause in between, and I've had quite extensive surgery for my endometriosis, but it was kind of everything but looking at the problem and trying, for me, I think it kind of masked the problem and masked the symptoms rather than addressing the symptoms. And same with like bowel problems that I had related to endometriosis, that wasn't picked up till quite late on as well.
So firstly, about the pill, because you've told us a lot of information there. So we would often, as GPs, use the combined pill as a way of helping with period pains and take it. But the tip, I think, from what you're saying there, is to take it back to back. So don't have a break between the packets of the pills and try and prevent any bleeding. And I think you said that was more helpful.
You know, it helped me for a certain amount of time, I think, until new symptoms started coming. And then, so my new symptoms were to do with my bowel and my eating habits and things like that. And then I was misdiagnosed with IBS. I was even referred to see a dietitian and, you know, did the whole low FODMAP, gluten, dairy free dieting. And that barely touched the sides. And I think there wasn't any either a conversation or knowledge that endometriosis could spread onto the bowel from the point that I reported these to the GP, because I remember I got tested for everything but endometriosis, you know, like IBDs and anything bowel related. You know, I've had stool samples galore, and even that raised inflammatory markers, and they just said, oh, you know, you're fine, it's normal. But that pain for me just wasn't normal. And it was only when I went to the hospital that I even heard about endometriosis and knew that it could spread.
Yeah, it's a great point. We must remember that although typically endometriosis sits sort of around the uterus in the peritoneal cavity, that it can go anywhere. And for us, we've got to be better at recognising the cyclical changes related to bowel problems, particularly to start with, because it gets different later on, doesn't it, with untreated disease, where the scarring then causes this chronic problem of pain. But in the beginning bit, it may be urinary symptoms. Some people will have more frequency or dysuria or hematuria with the cyclical symptoms of endometriosis, or if it's in the bowel, as you say, bowel problems. So it's really important for us to remember that. So you were using the pill, but it clearly wasn't giving you enough help. So did you get referred to the hospital eventually then?
Yeah, so after I saw a community gynaecologist on and off for about a year and a half, I think they were at their wit's end and then eventually referred me to the hospital. It took about 6 months to get that referral picked up. And then from there, I had a transvaginal scan, which showed the endometriosis on my like uterus, ovaries, bowel, like kind of all the pelvic organs, bladder, and everything was stuck together and pulled back. And then I think a couple of weeks from there, I was given already a date for my diagnostic laparoscopy. So everything happened really quickly, I think, because they had lost my referral in the first place. Yeah, it kind of, everything was just sped up, which I'm quite surprised about to this day. So yeah, a couple of weeks after I had my diagnostic, I remember waking up thinking, oh great, I'm cured, I'm done, I won't have any more. Just to be told that I'd need a bigger surgery because it was too complex. So in between that time, with 6 months, I had the induced menopause, the chemical one, to shut down my ovaries. And then I had a larger surgery that year, which was, I think, about 10 hours long, where they did the excision, the stoma bag. I had stents inserted for a couple of months. I spent just over a week in hospital as well. And then, yeah, came home. And then had two further surgeries to insert and reinsert stents to help my urethras.
Wow. So you've certainly been through it.
Yeah.
You started by talking about that medical menopause. So you were young and you would have been given some injections that would have induced, it would have just shut you down, as you said. So how did you feel during that time? That must have been pretty tough as well.
It was so hard. And I think, again, I was young and naive and didn't really do my own research to understand that it is, I believe it's a form of cancer medication. I didn't understand that at all. It was only, I think, months later, you know, when I see my hair falling out and I'm like gaining weight and the sweats and everything. It was hard doing that during summer as well. And then trying to explain to people why I'm hot flashing 24/7. I'm in my mid 20s and I don't know how my body's reacting to all of this. But yeah, and I think when I wasn't as much present, I guess, online or to do my own research to understand what the impacts were or to speak to other people. There was nobody I knew that was going through what I was going through at the time. I kind of just went with what I was told, yeah, to hopefully have a better quality of life at the end of it.
Yeah, so inducing a menopause like that stops the bleeding and in theory reduces the pain, doesn't it? And the ambition is that it then makes the surgery a little bit easier to do, although that sounds as though it was full on for you. And now you say you're left with a stoma bag, and you know, obviously you're young. What are the issues going forward? How do you feel about the surgery you've had and now?
You know, I think in one way I feel a lot healthier than what I did before. Before the surgery, you know, things like going to the gym or just going for a walk, I wouldn't be able to sustain myself. I'd be fainting when I was doing a workout and I wouldn't be able to even make it through like 10 minutes. But now, you know, I enjoy going to the gym. I can sustain myself a little bit longer. So in that sense, it's made me feel in myself a lot healthier. I think wider than that, in terms of maybe finding a partner and trying to explain what endometriosis is, does that impact my fertility? I don't know. What does my body look like to somebody that doesn't know what a bag is? And to kind of explain the basics of, I don't go to the toilet the normal way that somebody would. And I know it shouldn't be a problem, but in the back of my mind, you think, will they accept that? And will they accept me for being different or unique? It's it's a lot, I think, that runs through your mind at that time. And I'm still trying to kind of get to grips with how to have that conversation.
Yeah, that's massive, isn't it? Well done, thanks for sharing that, because it's so, again, underestimated, undervalued, I think. Do you find that you need to continue with ongoing support from your GP to help you at the moment, or is it now a fairly transactional process where you are getting the stoma bags and other equipment that you need?
I go through a stoma company and they just go direct to the GP for prescription. So it's quite seamless, which is good. It was more in the hospital when I first had it. So I wasn't aware I'd be getting a stoma. I literally just woke up from surgery and felt it on my stomach. So I never saw a nurse beforehand. Every doctor I saw said we wouldn't need it. We could do surgery without it. So I was fully prepared to wake up with no stoma bag. Yeah, it was kind of in the hospital where they expected me to know what to do and how to change it and, you know, an alien thing on my stomach. And just things like working and clothing and dieting, it's all kind of a lifestyle change, which has taken a while to get used to as well.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that you're able to do those, the gym and things better, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's been a real balance for you. Going forward, for us as clinicians, what could we do better? What do you think would have helped you better through the course of the treatments you've had and the support you've had?
I think maybe a better understanding of like period pains, and I think we all know what our pain threshold is and when that pain goes above that threshold in terms of needing to go to a GP. I think, in my opinion, there shouldn't have been a need for me to go to the GP like, you know, 10 plus times or more over the course of several years just for a period, or to end up in A&E because of a period pain. And I think probably maybe more of like a more thorough assessment of those symptoms, of any changes. I feel like sometimes when we do have problems, the first thing is, do you have your periods? Is it regular? And then those kind of questions follow. And then if the answer is yes, 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 you're kind of already dismissed and you're already fighting a battle. So I think probably more understanding of the symptoms, and as well, like endometriosis can travel around the body. If my GP had known that at the time I was complaining about bowel symptoms and, you know, having blood in my stools and those kind of things that are quite serious symptoms to have, that might have been tackled sooner and I may not have had the need to have a stoma bag. So I think more knowledge and awareness of what endometriosis is and menstrual health in general.
Yeah, good points. NICE clearly tell us in their guidance on heavy menstrual bleeding as well as on endometriosis, listening and appreciating better. If the problem is affecting the woman in front of us, then it's something that we should recognise as having just not the, you know, not just a medical model to it, but just thinking holistically about the impact the problem's having. And at the moment, one of the issues with extended waiting lists is that women are having to wait longer for this sort of surgery and care in the specialist centres because of endometriosis is deemed to be a benign disease. So it sits behind cancer, etc., which is understandable. But it's not necessarily recognising the huge impact it has on the social well-being and psychological well-being of younger patients. And is there anything else what else have you found helpful? Because there are good resources online, aren't there? So what other support did you eventually manage to find?
So I initially started out with like Facebook groups. I think I put a few comments in there when I was kind of trying to understand what endometriosis was and where to go for support and to talk to other people. And then on Instagram platform as well, I put my story up after my surgery and I just found this whole group of people obviously suffering with chronic illnesses and endometriosis as well that have been amazing to connect with, and they're real people with real life stories going through very similar situations to what I am as well. And I think that's what I missed at the time of going through that diagnosis period, was someone like me or that had had surgery to ask those kind of questions to, or to kind of ask, you know, what do I go and ask my GP? I'm suffering really badly. Are there any questions you'd recommend I can ask so that they can take note? Yeah, so it's been amazing to have that. And then Endometriosis UK as well is out there. I've been to a few support groups with them. And then, yeah, just connecting with people wherever and however I can.
Very good. But it's a brave thing to do, put a story like that onto, a story like yours onto Facebook, isn't it? It's a very personal thing to share. But I'm sure you've offered so many other people support and empowerment to know that they need to get something more done.
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite empowering as well to connect with so many people. Like, they help me and I help them, and you probably don't even realise it either. But yeah, it's been amazing to see so many. It's sad to see so many suffering, but at the same time, amazing to connect with so many.
Brilliant, brilliant. And you mentioned Endometriosis UK. So that's the charity that I know you support. And that's a fantastic charity, isn't it? With so many useful resources on there for patients, but also for clinicians. So have a look. People should have a look and signpost people to the charity, because it's so fab, isn't it?
Yeah, they're amazing and they do great work. Yes, I'm proud to have been, well, volunteering with them and doing work with them as well.
Great.
Just to spread the word.
Yeah, great. But I think the issue for sufferers, and also maybe for us as clinicians, is signposting somebody to Endometriosis UK, to a website like that, which, as I say, is fantastic, with sometimes not having the diagnosis. You know, there's that balance, isn't there? I think you might have this and you might find this helpful, and not frighten people.
Yeah, I think it's like the delivery of the information as well. And if I wish I had been signposted to that, because then I could have maybe done my own research or had understood a bit better for myself to then be better armed to speak with my GP and understand a bit more what's going on.
Yeah, very good point. So thank you so much for joining this podcast and for sharing your experiences. It sounds as though you've had some really difficult times, but hopefully some of them have been a bit better. And moving forward, now that you've started to understand the condition better, should be, at least you're informed. So great for everything you've done. I'm sure that the listeners to this podcast have learnt so much, because you've brought all this to life and reality, and helped us understand how complex endometriosis is, and what an impact it can have on you and so many others. Thanks for supporting the work of Endometriosis UK. They do such a great job to help raise awareness of the condition and to improve the standards of care that women receive. And I know they're working hard at the moment to continue to push for better evidence and research about a condition which affects so many. This is the end of this podcast. Please look at the resources available on the RCGP Women's Health Hub at rcgp.org.uk/women's-health, and also on the Endometriosis UK website to further your knowledge about this complex condition. Thank you for listening.